Hello, my name is Dr. Samuel Kim.
And I'm Sharon Kim.
And welcome to Research Sense for Korean American Therapy, a podcast that removes barriers and gives you a rundown of the latest Korean American mental health research. Today's episode comes from a paper entitled The Intersectional Prototypicality Model, Understanding the Discriminatory Experiences of Asian American Women and Men. It was written by Y. Joel Wong and Keiko M. McCullough. So Sharon, this was an interesting article.
Very interesting.
What were they trying to address?
They were trying to address, you know, the subtle discrimination that Asian Americans experience. And they kind of introduced a framework to understand that the experiences of discrimination and what we have to go through in terms of gender and race. So as Asian American men and as Asian American women, what do we go through and experience? And it was super, super interesting to read. I resonated with so many things, and I know that our listeners are going to resonate a lot with what is going to be shared today.
Yeah, I think it sort of addresses this idea of how Asian are you or how American are you? I mean, it talks about a lot of other things, but I think that might be a good place for our listeners to settle their minds, and we're going to go on this journey together.
So one thing that they introduce in the very beginning is this term prototypicality. And prototypicality is the extent to which you are seen as having the attribute of a larger group. So for instance, how Korean am I and how Asian American am I compared to other Asian Americans, or how American am I, do I look compared to other Americans?
When you ask that question, like how Korean are you, what are some things that come to your mind? Like for me, things that come to my mind about being Korean is someone who looks Asian.
Yes.
It's someone who likes Korean cuisine. And if we go further into that, someone who likes a lot of seafood, likes very, very spicy foods and very, very flavorful foods. Mm-hmm. Additionally, understanding of culture and the language and how to interact with people, those are all things. And so when you make a judgment of how Korean are you, I think all of those things come to mind. But this is not just a question of how Korean are you, but it can also be, as you said, you know, how male are you, or how masculine are you, or how feminine are you, or how American are you, or how, let's put it this way, Northern are you, or how Southern are you, or how much of a city person you are. And so prototypicality is just this term meaning how much are you like this group of people. And there's two other terms that come from it. And so the first one is hypoprototypicality. And that just means that a person does not seem like or is not representative of the larger group. So it would be as if we asked, like, how Korean are you? Someone who was born in the U.S., could not speak a lick of Korean, did not like Korean food, did not have any Korean friends, so didn't know, like, cultural things related to Korean culture. One would say that this person is probably pretty hypoprototypical. Right. So they're not really that Korean.
Right. And we need to emphasize the fact that this is how other people perceive you. So it might not be true, right? You might still be and feel very much Korean, but this research paper wanted to just focus on how do other people perceive Asian American men and women, not how Asian American men and women feel and perceive themselves to be.
That's a really good point. And just to emphasize it even further, we're not putting labels on people. We're not saying, oh, if you are like this, you are not Korean. We are not saying that. We're saying this is how others view others. And sort of our natural instinct is to sort of put people in boxes in our heads. It's like as much as we try, it just automatically does that for lots of reasons. Perhaps we'll go into that in another episode. But this is a way to sort of understand these perceptions and then perhaps ways to, once you understand it, we can then start to combat it. So yeah, let's talk more about hypoprototypicality.
Yeah. So hypoprototypicality, one thing that we know of in that research, there have been a lot of research done on this as well, where Asian American men, for instance, are seen as less representative of that men category than white men. And so suddenly we see that What this paper really stated was that white female and males are seen as the prototypical, right, men and women of society. So if you men and they went even as far as saying that white males and females are seen to have just the right amount of masculinity and femininity, and everyone else, every other racial group, has either more of that or less of it. So hypo or hyper, right? And so what has been found is that Asian American men are seen to have less masculinity than white men, whereas Asian American women, and we'll talk more about this later and under the hyper prototypical story, where Asian American women are seen to have more femininity than white females.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And some of that can be very damaging. It's not just like, oh, how does my neighbor see me? Or what does my friend think of me? Or what does my boss think of me? It can have a lot of consequences. For example, if we take the male, the masculine perspective, males are often seen as strong and they're often seen as leaders. And so if you just look at, you know, who's leading the Fortune 500 companies, who's in charge, and the leaders in our, even in our country, the elected leaders, the vast majority of them tend to be men. What's interesting is when you get down to it, Asian American men are often told like, oh, you're doing a good job. They get a lot of accolades at work. They are seen as very hard workers, but there aren't a lot of Asian American men leaders. Mm-hmm. And that could be an example of that perception is, oh, they're not really male. They're not really have the qualities to be a good leader. And so because of that hyper prototypicality that Asian American men are seen as like less male or less strong, that they might be passed up for promotions, they might be passed up for opportunities to become leaders.
And what you're describing here is the consequence of marginalization. So whenever somebody or a group is under the hypoprototypical, right? So you are seen as having less of something, then you're going to be marginalized for either a promotion, a leadership position. How does marginalization happen to Asian Americans? And one thing that you mentioned was that they receive less recognition for their contributions and are underrepresented in leadership positions. And one thing that was interesting was that the research states in a 2001 survey of Americans, it found that 23% of Americans are uncomfortable voting for an Asian American U.S. president. That was a percentage much greater than all the other major racial minority groups.
And this is a 2001 survey, meaning it took place long before Andrew Yang had announced his candidacy for president. So this was an issue that was already set. The stage was set and Andrew Yang didn't have as much advantage moving forward because there was already this perception within the US. Yeah. Additionally, marginalization is not just getting less recognition for contributions or being underrepresented. It's also being seen as a perpetual foreigner. Like no matter what, even if you grew up in the US, you're just seen as a foreigner. I remember that I was visiting a friend in the city and someone just walked up to us and asked, so where are you from? And I said, the US. It's like, no, 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 where are you from? I said, Georgia. It's like, no, 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 where are you really from? And I named my hometown and they're like, no, really, where are you from? And I named the county I was from. And he just kept going. And I just like, I named the hospital I was born in. And I was just like, where's this guy going to go? Because I knew what he was asking for. Yes. But I was just so annoyed by that. Mm-hmm. And I am very, very American. Like I was born here. I am a citizen. I vote. I participate in things. But I'm still seen as someone who doesn't belong here. Mm-hmm. Another example that was talked about within the article was Jeremy Lin, who is the Asian American professional basketball player. And it talked about, and I think I remember reading about this, and I don't follow sports at all, but I still remember hearing about this, that he was once denied entry into Madison Square Garden because the security guard didn't think he was part of the team.
So imagine Jeremy Lin trying to explain, no, I am a professional basketball player. I play for the Knicks. And they're like, yeah, right. Like I've never seen an Asian American basketball player in my life. Right. So having people perceiving that, okay, basketball players need to look a certain way puts a stereotypical I guess, image of what Asian American males have to go through and Asian Americans have to go through. And one other consequence of marginalization is that there's an absence of representation in mass media. And this actually differs by gender. Asian male faces are less likely to be featured in North American popular magazines than Asian female faces. So we're going to talk about why that is. Why is there a difference between males and females? But let's talk about what I really found interesting. This paper talked about a very interesting, realistic example of Asian American men as dating partners.
And just to be very, very clear to our audience, we are talking about heteronormative relationships. So this is just heterosexual relationships. The paper didn't go into non-traditional relationships or other relationships. And we're not going to go there for today's episode because I think we would be talking for a couple of hours if we were. Perhaps in another episode, we'll dive deeper into that. But it's interesting. Remember what we said earlier about the hypoprototypical? Asian American men are tend to be seen as less masculine, that they don't have the masculine characteristics that would be attractive to heterosexual women. Well, that engenders that marginalization. And it's just like, well, you know, I'm not interested in them. And this is not just anecdotal or like someone's experience of seeing it. So one study looked at dating profiles and found that white women preferred Asian American men the least out of all other men of any other ethnicity. Another study found that only 9% of heterosexual women prefer to date Asian American men. And just to provide a little bit of contrast, 61% of heterosexual men preferred Asian American women. That's a big gap. And I don't think that this is an accident. I don't think you found like just the right group of people who liked Asian American women and like Asian American men. It's like, this is a trend. Like this is, there's something going on in the perception of people.
Yes. And this consequently affects the mental health of Asian American men. Asian American men exhibit higher rates of body dissatisfaction than Black and white men, which is really unfortunate. I was very upset when I was reading this section. And the other section that I know will be very interesting for our listeners as well is they talked about Asian American female leaders, right? Mm-hmm. So they're giving really two great examples of hypoprototypical people who do not seem to represent the greater group, right? So Asian American men as dating partners are very much a minority. Asian American female leaders are very much a minority as well. Why? Because Asian American women are commonly seen as hyper feminine. They are perceived as not having enough qualities to become a great leader, which is what we think of as more masculine. And so they are less likely to be selected as a leader in a position, and compared to both Black and white women.
Yeah, there was a study that was looking at the executives in Silicon Valley. So this is kind of like a what I would consider the frontier edge of technology. And so I would imagine that the companies here are forward thinking. So let me give you some numbers. In this one study in Silicon Valley, there was one white male leader for every white male that can be found employed within the companies out there. Also, for white women, there was one for every 123 white women out there, one was a leader. And if we want to get further into it, there was one Asian American female executive in Silicon Valley companies for every 285 Asian American women working there. These are stark, stark numbers.
And when Asian American women are given leadership positions, they're seen as less competent and credible. So it's hard to get through that and get to a leadership position. But then even when you are a leader, you're seen as less competent and credible.
I don't want to put you on the spot, Sharon, but I remember when you became executive director of Mustard Seed Generation, I remember we were having a conversation about you meeting with older Korean American leaders of like churches and organizations. And I distinctly remember I mean, I hadn't read this article at that point, so I don't think I was that articulate with my thinking. But I do recall saying, hey, if you need to have me with you, mm-hmm. not so much to like help you find the words, or I was afraid you were incompetent, but if you need a male yes. to be there with you yeah. so that this person will listen to you, that I'd be happy to do that. And it just strikes me now, reading through this article, it's like, oh my gosh, this is the world we live in.
Yeah, I do remember that conversation. And it wasn't the first time either somebody offered or I asked. So I feel like as an Asian American female leader, I constantly have to prove myself. And this isn't just, you know, true for myself. I know that other minority groups also experience this, but I constantly either have to make myself seen as super competent by using my credentials, using something else that proves my worth, or bring along a male colleague to be taken seriously. I have to go an extra mile to be taken seriously for that. So I think it's just like you said, it's reality. It's something that's definitely not ideal, but I think it's difficult when you are meeting with male leaders, I think, and when most of, you know, the people that you meet and are going to interact with have that perception that leaders are supposed to have certain qualities mm-hmm. and you don't mm-hmm. meet that quality, or you're not seen as meeting that quality.
Yeah. And I just want to remind our listeners, we're not saying all Asian American men have these perspectives. We're not saying all Korean American men have these perspectives, but there's enough people out there who have this perspective right. that we have to keep this in mind when we're interacting with other people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's all under the umbrella of hypoprototypicality. So people who don't quite fit that majority group. There's another term called hyperprototypical. And this is when you have exaggerated or excessive characteristics of that group.
Right. And so just like what we said, men and women are seen as having the right amount of masculinity and femininity, then groups with stereotypes, right, either where Black men are seen as hyper-masculine or Asian American women are seen as hyper-feminine, we as Asian American women are going to be hyper-prototypical members of that femininity group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Asian American women, I would say there's a... on the broad spectrum, are seen as submissive, petite, they're seen as exotic and sexually appealing. Whereas African-American men are often seen as aggressive, very masculine. And, you know, when I was reading those descriptions about African-American men, I just kept thinking about the disparities that exist in special education mm-hmm. of how many African-American boys are put into special education because of behavioral issues mm-hmm. and how many of them get suspensions and how many of them get expelled from school. Mm-hmm. And I just keep thinking, oh my gosh, is this the perception of hyper-prototypicality? That's, mm-hmm. I'm not saying that this is the cause of it, but it's at least a contributor. Like it's mm-hmm. at least contributing to this issue.
Yeah. This is part of the systemic discrimination that's happening to Black Americans and Asian Americans. And interestingly, though, one thing that I really appreciated about this article was that they went a little bit further to talk about that some people can be hyper-prototypical in certain social roles, but then be hypo-prototypical in other roles. So for instance, Asian American men, as we talked about, are seen as lacking masculinity, right? They're hypo-prototypical, but then in certain roles, they're seen as being highly competent in the STEM fields, right? Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So they're there in that field, they're seen as hyper-prototypical. People see that they have or perceive them to have higher levels of competency when it comes to that field. And so there was a study that kind of researched US business undergraduates. And what they found was that these undergraduates perceived Asian American male engineers to be more competent than white male engineers with exactly the same identical credentials.
And I would pose a question, how many of those competent Asian American engineers end up becoming leaders? How many of them end up becoming executives of the companies mm-hmm. that they're working for? Mm-hmm. How many of them get to the C-suites?
Right.
You know, I really wonder about that. It's like there's, you can only get up so far, or something that I've heard is referred to as the bamboo ceiling. It's like,
yes,
there's only so far you can go. So what are the consequences of hyper-prototypicality? We've kind of talked about some different aspects. We've talked about some specific examples, but it comes down to objectification. Mm-hmm. That if people are seen with this hyper-prototypicality lens, they're seen as objects. And this objectification can be really, really bad. For example, we talked about how Asian American women are often objectified because they're seen as hyper feminine. And they're often fetishized under this concept called yellow fever. There was an example that was given about a qualitative study that was done. They were interviewing Asian American women, and she talked about a friend touching her hair, putting his arm around her without her permission, and asking, "Hey, what kind of Asian are you?" And because of hyper prototypicality, or this mm-hmm. sense that, oh, you are very, very much like this category, mm-hmm. like you're either very feminine, you're very Asian, you're very American, or something, it leads to the stereotyping and you becoming an object. Like, you're no longer a human being, you are a thing.
You're not seen as a person, you're seen as a thing that can probably give them what they want, a purpose, right? And that is the consequence of being seen, you know, Asian American women, all Asian American women are very feminine. That's the perception that people have. And that, I think, is really hard to combat that kind of discrimination. Why? Because it's very subtle. And people, the perpetrators, think that they're actually giving a compliment when they're not. Right. So, wow, you're an Asian American woman, you're super sexy, right? But for them, in their minds, is their perception. Whereas they think that they're giving a compliment to an Asian American woman, whereas that woman feels like they're not seen as a person.
Let me give you another example. I have been complimented on how good my English is.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you experienced that as
of
well?
Of course. Yeah. Yes. Many times.
Yeah, it's that hyper-prototypicality, that overgeneralization. And another concept that falls under this is overvalidation, which mm-hmm. is an interesting form of what's referred to as microaggressions. So oftentimes, Asian Americans are praised by their supervisors for the good work that they do. That then serves as a basis for them getting more work. It's like, oh, you did great work. Here's your reward, more work.
Yes.
And so that's a type of overvalidation that provides a argument for. It's like, oh, because you do such a good job, I'm giving you this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Couple exactly. that with the likelihood that this Asian American person is unable to move forward and get promoted, you're just a workhorse.
Mm-hmm. You're seen as that object where you can just give you more work and you're going to do that for me and nothing mm-hmm. else. So
there's so much that we're talking about here, and I'm sure we could go on for literally hours talking about all of this. And you know, I really liked how this paper provided this framework of hypo, yes. hyper prototypicality, you know, how much you're seen as one or the other. Mm-hmm. So what does all of this mean for therapy? Like, we could go on for on and on about this, but what does this mean for you? Like, what does this mean for those of us who want to get help through therapy or therapists who are working with Asian Americans? One of the things that really came to mind for me was you can be very much like one group and very not like another group at different points in time. Mm-hmm. As well as different contexts. One example is I'm seen as very Asian and Korean here in the US, but every time I go to Korea, I am seen as hypo-prototypical. I'm seen as very American and not very Korean. Mm-hmm. And so I have almost different identities in different places, and they're not identities that I own or that I've put on. It's the identities that those around me in that context are putting onto me. And so therapists who are working with clients should keep in mind, in some contexts, they may have a lot of validation. They might be seen as part of a group, but there may be a lot of other contexts where mm-hmm. they're not seen like that. So they might be seen one way in family, among friends, in school or work. in social situations. And it just depends. And there needs to be a sensitivity to understand, okay, which one of these areas is causing all of this distress?
Yeah. I think as an individual too, learning about hypoprototypicality and hyperprototypicality has actually given me a framework to understand the world around me. It's not just, I think a lot of people put the blame on themselves. What is wrong with me? What's going on? I sense that I'm different wherever I go. And do I have multiple identities? You know, all these things. But it's actually, there are consequences to society seeing you a certain way in many different contexts. And you also perceiving that and internalizing that yourself. So unpacking that with a therapist, I think would be really beneficial, because it's not just us doing that to ourselves, but it might also be systemic discrimination.
Yeah, it could be other people seeing us in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And that's really affecting how we feel, think, and behave.
Yeah. I think as a therapist too, I think it would be really helpful to understand the marginalization and objectification that Asian American females have to go through, right? So I think it's good to work with them and also work within yourself first to understand and unpack your own stereotypes that you have of men and women, and then work with people of color, really truly understanding your own stereotypes first.
Yes, the self-reflection activities and practice is such an important aspect of being a good, thoughtful therapist. All right, well, we went through a lot today, and that was a doozy of an article, but if any of you have access to it, we highly recommend that you read it. We'll be coming back next week, and the article for next week is entitled Culturally Specific Parent Mental Distress, Parent-Child Relations and Youth Depression Among Korean American Families. Wow, we are not letting up with these episodes, are we? Well, we hope you'll join us next week.
Goodbye, see you everyone. Next time. Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed our episode, please subscribe to our podcast and check out more at mustardseedgeneration.org
and samuelykim.com. To keep these episodes coming, rate and share on wherever you listen to this podcast.